This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of September 23rd, 2019. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. We have something slightly different for you today. You could think about it as a slice of life in the Indianapolis tech community, although this particular life is pretty extraordinary. We spend a lot of time talking about tech employees in Indianapolis, why they're so important, and why we care so intensely about bringing more of them here. We talk about what we think they want from Indianapolis. But we always could spend more time talking to tech employees. Our guest today had no connection to Indianapolis before he arrived in Indiana in 2013 to study at Rose Holman Institute of Technology. He wasn't too far removed from his native country of China, which he left as a teenager to attend high school in the U.S. His name is Luke Zhang, or that's the anglicized version. You'll hear him pronounce it in Chinese here in a moment. He's 26 and has distinguished himself in the tech community in a very short period of time. He graduated with 3 degrees from Rose Holman: computer science, software engineering, and mathematics, with a near-perfect GPA. He has been a part of TechPoint's Extern program and then its Tech Fellowship class of 2017. He is a data scientist and machine learning engineer for Indianapolis-based startup Demand Jump. It's an up-and-coming firm in the Indianapolis tech community's strongest sector, digital marketing. This year, Luke was honored by TechPoint's Tech 25 program, which is kind of a best and brightest designation for folks outside the C-suite. He is widely considered a brilliant engineer and mathematician who has received job offers from some of the world's biggest tech firms, you know who they are, and has chosen to take a different path in Indianapolis. So we asked him this week for the story of how he ended up here and where he thinks the city is headed. Here's our conversation. Luke, thank you so much for making time for us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Explain to me very quickly, what is the correct way to pronounce your name?
So Chinese 101 here. The correct way to pronounce my name is Lu Jia Zhang.
And Lu Jia means Luke.
Yes.
Is that correct? And
yes.
And that would harken back to the Bible. Is
yep.
that right?
Yep. My family has been Christian for 6 generations, and that's why my grandpa picked the name out of the Chinese Bible.
So, well, now we call you a data scientist and a machine learning engineer. If you can, explain to me very gently what that means. What is it that you were doing for Demand Jump?
Okay, as a data scientist, I analyze the data that's been provided from our customers. Some of our customers are Fortune 500 enterprise. Some of them are local startups, and they all face different kind of problems, whether it regret their product or their services. So by analyzing all those data, I'm able to tell them, you know, where the gaps between you and your competitors, and try to optimize your solution, your product, your service, so that everybody wins.
Now, let's do it for a four-year-old. my son is almost four, and he kind of knows what the internet is now. Yeah. He knows that I get stuff off of the internet, and we play games on the internet.
Yeah.
Explain to him, what is it that you do?
Yeah, for 4 years old, I don't know what kind of game your son plays. Nature Cat. Let's say your son wants to watch a Nature Cat videos or wants to buy some product around Nature Cats. Mm-hmm. By analyzing your son's profile and linking with other data, so we are able to help the NatureNet product company to target your kid and then sell them stuff, then your kids are able to get those things more easy, and then your kids are able to search and make the entire transition better.
And why is Indianapolis a good place to be doing that?
Yes, so in my belief, Indianapolis has the potential to be the giant in Middle West. When we think of tech, we think of Silicon Valley in the West Coast, we think of New York City in the East. But does any city in Middle West jump out of your mind? Jump out?
Maybe
I don't
Chicago,
think so.
Yeah.
Maybe Chicago, but Chicago is more banking and finance based. People talk about Austin, but Austin's so down in the South. With, you know, ExactTarget getting acquired by Salesforce and AngelList and a few other companies in town kind of took off, Indianapolis really has a potential to be the hub of Middle West. We can count a lot of things great about Indianapolis: low cost of living, friendly people, connections.
We'll return to that here in a few minutes. But I wanted to go back to the beginning. Tell me where you grew up.
I was born and raised in a town called Wenzhou, China.
I understand that Wen means mild and warm.
Yep, yep.
Is that correct? Okay, yep, that's so correct. The weather is nice.
Yep, it's a lot like Florida.
You know, we make a lot of jokes about Indianapolis, but not having mountains or beaches. Your home city has both.
Yep. I definitely love my hometown. Everybody is super friendly. It's a small town with a really big population.
What's the culture like growing up there? What was the experience like for you?
Asian culture are really different than American cultures. As a kid, you're expected to do well at school, and that's it. You don't have to care about sports. You don't have to care about other activities. Versus here, that you have to be really well around. You have to do sports. You have to do other extra curriculums. So back home, my parents always want me to be the number one, whether it's a class or a competition or the school. So there's a lot of stress.
So as a young teenager, you decided you wanted to come to America.
Yep.
So where did that come from? Why did you get that
idea?
So
my family, when I was little, my family took a family trip to Sydney, Australia. And our hotel was located right by the Sydney University. And I saw a bunch of international students who carry their backpack, super happy, go to the school, go to the university, learn the stuff they like to learn, and become good at those things. And that kind of just planted a seed in my brain that one day I want to study abroad somewhere. I want to learn the stuff I actually enjoy, and I want to be free.
Yeah. So you would have, had you stayed in China, you feel like you would have been railroaded into a particular field, perhaps?
Yeah. I think back home, because of all the pressure and the competition, it's easier. It's definitely easier for me to follow my parents' pattern of, you know, getting a good grades at school, work for the government, get a good pay, get married. So there isn't that much of freedom of doing the so we call American dream. It's definitely hard to pursue what you love.
So did you bring this up with your parents? How did that transaction go?
Yeah, so luckily my family has always been really supportive. They visit all different places around the world and they've seen what's out there. Once I brought that up to my parents, and they definitely love the idea, and they think with my personality, with the skill that I show at school back home, I will be able to do well in here as well. And they want to put me in a test, see whether I will survive, you know, in a different culture with people that I don't know and speak a language that I was not fluent with. So we just we took a leap of faith and just did it. And I finished my high school in Orlando.
Private high school in Orlando.
Yeah.
And you did really kind of incredibly well. You were a three-time champion of the American Invitational Mathematics Exam, which is a competition of top high school math students from across the United States. Did you know when you came over that that's where your talent was, or did you discover that?
Yeah, funny jokes for you guys. As a true Asian, math kind of runs in my blood. So I've always been really good at math. And back home in China, I did really well with math. And once I came here, I did even better.
And then did that just lead into programming as well?
Yes, yes. And credit to my high school programming teacher. He set me up really well for programming. He said, look, if you're that good at, you know, math, you should probably try programming and coding as well, because those things are really related. I ended up joining the programming team and took an AP computer science course and actually went around participating in a lot of programming competitions and won a lot of them.
Was there like a moment when you kind of realized a light bulb went off in your head, like, man,
yeah,
I'm really good at this. I should do this.
Yeah. So I actually remember the first competition I ever participate as a really young, you know, inexperienced newbie. My team won second place and I went home with the Xbox. And that was the moment that I realized, oh, man, I'm so good at this. Maybe I should keep going, because if you work hard for those competitions, you get rewards, right? You get Xbox, you get PS4, all those things that young boys love for free. With those rewards, you want to work harder. So it's a really good cycle that keeps you going.
One thing you did have to work on a little bit was your English, I'm guessing. Did you study English in China?
Yes, English is a primary second language for Chinese students.
But when you come to America, you've got to deal with conversational English. Yeah. What was difficult about that?
Yeah, it was a completely different story. Chinese students back home were more focused on writing and reading. Speaking wasn't the primary goal of learning English. But luckily, with my outgoing personality, I've been always good at speaking to people using different language, and I'm fearless, so I like to try. But the first funny story that I ever had was first day of high school, a bunch of American kids came up to me and say, "What's up?" I kid you not, I looked up on the sky and said, "No, that's a sky. I don't know, what do you mean?" And they said, you know, "What's up" means "how are you?" You soon realize, oh, that's really different, and you pick it up really soon.
So how did you end up then at Rose Holman?
One of my really close high school friends ended up choosing Rose Holman, and he was a year older than me. And he told me Rose Holman is really similar, just like my high school, private, small class sizes, which I care the most, because I built a really good relationship with my high school teachers. And I would like to continue that with my college professors. And Rose Holman was the first school that I applied, and the first school I got the acceptance letter with a little bit of scholarships. And without even visiting Rose Holman, I just picked it.
So at Rose Holman, you're part of the school's computer programming team, which I understand. So this theme of competition comes up again. Yep. You competed in national, international events. You know, the world of computer science and mathematics has a lot of really smart people, but they're not always like with the best people skills. But you are known as somebody who can bring people together and get them to work as a cohesive unit. Is that just a natural thing, or is that something that you've worked at?
I think that's something that I'm good at. Also, I worked on it a lot on purposely, because what I realized is, especially in STEM and in the programming world, in the science world, a lot of really intelligent people are having a hard time to communicate with others because they are just so smart. One good example is one of my college really dear friend whose IQ just out of the world. You know right at the moment that you're just not as smart as him. We tend to take the same classes, similar classes, we share classrooms. And when we first met, he would have criticized me of not knowing what this term is about. How can you not see the solution right away? As a normal human being who came out being the, you know, the hot guy from your high school, from your hometown, your ego was definitely really hurt. And a lot of people shy away from those conversations saying, "I don't want to be friends with this guy. Why are you so rude?" But eventually I realized my dear friend, he actually doesn't understand why you don't get this solution. He's so lacking of people skills makes him really hard to communicate what he wants to communicate. And I soon realized there are so many smart people out there. I probably won't be the smartest guy my entire life. And why can I try be the most effective communicator who are pretty smart, who can build the bridge between the business, between the normal human being and the intelligence people?
What do you think is the most important lesson that you learned about how to communicate?
I think you really have to put yourself in their shoes and then be patient. And don't jump into the conclusion right away. I think in human nature, we are all predators as human beings. We like to jump into conclusion to show that we are dominant. But a lot of times, if you take a step back and just take 5 seconds to think about what your plans are, what your reaction should be, you'll realize, oh, wait a minute, that's what this person is talking about. He doesn't mean this in a harm way. And if you can kind of slow down, take a step back, which is really hard to do in this fast-paced society, if you master that skill, you'll realize you become really popular. People like to talk to you. They want to share their opinion with you because they are not afraid that you will criticize them, that they are more than happy to work with you.
All right, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is sponsored by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
All right, we're back with the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King, and we're talking with Luke Zhang, a data scientist and machine learning engineer for Demand Jump here in Indianapolis. So in 2014, that you joined the Extern program, which is a college internship program run by the local tech advocacy group, TechPoint. You later became part of TechPoint's Tech Fellowship class of 2017, and you became curriculum chairman. What does that mean exactly?
Basically, I don't know if you've heard of Oral Fellowship. So it's the tech version of Oral Fellowship, where TechPoint kind of recruits fresh out of college kids and place them in different tech companies in town. And then we will constantly organize monthly meetings and trying to get the tech leaders like CEOs, CTOs, we have them come in to give us a talk, to tell us their words and wisdoms. And also we do volunteer events. We do we serve the community, trying to give back. And we also have fun as well. So as a curriculum chair, my duty was to organize all those big talks with the CEO and CTO. And throughout my entire curriculum chair career for a short year, I organized a couple big events, such as having the mayor of Indianapolis, Mayor Hogsett, came in. We got to see his office, hear his opinion on indie tech. And we have, you know, mid-level management people who came in, gave us talks about how we are going to be them in 5, 10 years. And how is that life different from being the new guys on the team? And we also had big CEOs come in to give us talk about how you get to the very, very, very next level of becoming a CEO, running a successful company. Mm.
Was there any one lesson that you took from that?
I think that's what I appreciate about indie tech ecosystem, Indiana in general. People are so nice here. Whenever you make a reasonable request, they respond to you right away. Scott Dorsey came in, it was a co-event with the Oral Fellowship. He gave, out of his busy schedule, he took the time out and gave us a talk. And can you imagine having that big of a CEO came in like a normal person and give the young kids a talk about his life and about his career? I don't think that happens in Silicon Valley. I don't think you can easily get a hold of Mark Zuckerberg and say, yo, Mark, would you like to come in and give, you know, the 20 of us a talk? People here are just so nice and so happy to give back.
Yeah, so when you graduate from Rose Holman, I guess I can brag for a little bit, and you got offers from, you know, the biggest firms. I mean, yeah. Facebook, Google, Amazon. Why did you stay in Indianapolis?
That circles back to the people connection and also TechPoint as well. I want to give kudos to TechPoint. My first ever internship was with Extern, with KSMC. And that's when I met my mentor, Tyler Foxworthy. Shout out to Tyler and his own company, Vertex Intelligence. Tyler and I are literally the same kind of people. Tyler was the prodigy before me. He was young, smart data scientist, super successful. He was the chief data scientist at KSMC. I worked under him as an intern, as a young freshman intern who doesn't know anything. And Tyler was able to give me so much advice, whether it's career or life, that we kept this mentorship going for now 6 years or 7 years now. We still get drinks all the time and talk about, you know, the most advanced academia paper or business or whatever. And that kind of people connection, that warm, friendly connection kept us going for entire college. And I went, worked for, you know, West Coast companies, East Coast company, part-time for Middle West company as well. And I worked for many different companies, and I just don't get that anywhere out of Indianapolis. And then when my senior year rolls around, I actually got a lot of offers, and I actually went on a lot of on-site companies to see what their culture is about. And Tyler sold me on literally one sentence. He said, if you go to a big company, great, you're making a lot of money, but you're nothing more than a badge number. The company will still exist if you leave. They become a little bit better with you there, but there are so many people there and the company structure is so well established, you are not that important. You are nothing more than a badge number. But versus here in Indianapolis, Indiana, the whole tech ecosystem is growing. People like us who can make a difference. Yes, money is great. Yes, you know, benefits great. But it's that difference that makes me feel like important. I met the governor multiple times. I met the mayor multiple times. I got to sit down with Scott Dorsey. Those opportunities that I will never get if I went West Coast or East Coast.
What could Indianapolis be doing better to grow the tech ecosystem?
Being in the Middle West, we're normally too humble to sell ourselves. We have so many great things in here. Indiana produces the second largest engineers in the nation. We have the best IMS sports, right? Pacers. We have so many great things that we don't sell it enough. We have the number one, the biggest children's museum on the earth. We have so many things that we can sell, but we don't take pride on selling them, telling the world outside, hey, we're here, we're doing fantastic. Sometimes I think being humble is great, but I think at some moment, you gotta jump out of the box a little bit, be proud of yourself. Not saying you should be cocky, but be proud of ourselves and sell ourselves.
What happened to a lot of your fellow graduates at Rose Holman? Did a lot of them stay in Indiana or did most of them go somewhere else?
So majority of my friends end up working for West Coast company, big names like Facebook, Google, Expedia, Amazon, etc. And some of them went to East Coast as well. And only a few of them, actually only a few, I want to say that percentage is like 10 or maybe 20%, maybe even less, end up staying in Indy. Because obviously West Coast, East Coast, and here, the wage difference, compensation, everything is so different. And if you never experienced the extern, you never experienced a tech fellowship, you never experienced interning or working for indie companies, you don't know, you don't want to take the risk, right? But that's if you go work for a big company, that's a sheet of paper that you're going to sign. You know you're going to get this amount of money. But in here, you don't know. You don't know what kind of soft benefits you will get. You don't know that you will get really great people connections and cost of living, low cost of living, etc.
Have you followed up with some of your friends to see how their experience is?
Yeah, so I'm still really tight with all my Rose Holman buddies. We get together all the time, snap, you know, FaceTime each other and go on trips. I want to say grass is always greener on the other side, but I'm not jealous of them, but I think they're more jealous of me to see me getting press, to win awards, to do cool stuff. A lot of them kind of just stuck at a team who does one part of things, like a small part of things. Versus me here in Demand Job, I'm lucky and spoiled to do different kinds of things. I get to solve literally different kinds of problems that you can ever imagine. I have a lot of flexibility to do different kinds of things, but versus, you know, being a small part of a big company, you get to do a small piece of it. And that piece, even that piece might have a gigantic team of 20 or 30. I think that importance is not there. That influence is just not there.
Now, you're currently getting a Master's of Science in Machine Learning from Georgia Institute of Technology. Where do you have time to do that?
great question.
It's online, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's online. I think you just have to budget your time well. One thing that I did to, you know, save some time for myself was cutting off social media. So I deleted my Instagram, I deleted my Facebook, Snapchat, etc. Because as a data scientist, there are a lot of talks about the data privacy and a few other, you know, all those things. The close friends you will have will still remain close with you. The small circle of friends will always be there. So I rather utilize those time to, you know, go pursue a master's degree or read a paper or go watch a movie, rather than sit there scrolling up and down doing nothing.
Now, you're currently in the U.S. on a work visa, and Demand Job is sponsoring the effort to get a green card. What is that process like?
It is a lot of back and forth between the company, the lawyer, and I. But luckily, credit to Demand Job. Also, I'm really appreciative and grateful for that. We are able to move the process and make it go smooth and fast. It is a lot of paperwork, a little bit money as well. But I think I'm going to quote my CEO, Christopher Day, here. He said he's more than happy to sponsor a person who truly understands what American dream is about.
And you want to become a U.S. citizen, which would mean that you'd have to give up Chinese citizenship,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
Are your parents okay with that?
Yes.
Have you had that conversation?
Yes, we had that conversation. That conversation was really short. So I went home for Lunar New Year this year. 2 days into my trip, I realized my stomach was not feeling right. And then I soon realized I missed my cheeseburger. that was a moment that I realized, man, I'm too Americanized. So I told my parents the next morning, and they are aware of it, that I'm getting my green card And we just had the conversation. I said, look, you see, like, I've been here majority of my life. I built all my connection here. I have a great job, great company to work for. If, you know, timing comes, I might give up on my Chinese citizen and become a U.S. citizen. And they're happy for it. So now, by now, they understand what American dream is about and what I really want. So they are really supportive of what I want to do.
That's all you can ask from your parents, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Luke. I really appreciate it. I'm sure we will be talking again sometime in the near future.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Luke. IBJ's Anthony Shutley has a full profile of Luke in the latest issue of IBJ, and as much from the perspective of his teachers and employers and mentors over the years as from Luke himself. A few other stories I wanted to point out in this week's paper. Sam Quinn explores how some Westfield residents have become skeptical of how quickly the city is growing and are pushing back against a deluge of new housing proposals. Also, Susan Orr takes a closer look at the next step in Indigo's strategy to attract more riders, working with employers and schools along the beefed-up transit system to make specialized pitches to their employees and students. Again, you can find these stories in the latest issue of IBJ, which, of course, you have delivered to your home or office, or online at IBJ.com. And remember, for full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just click the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time for the podcast this week, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.